Awesome. People filtering in. See Dale, see Vanessa. I'll ping a few others. But David, why don't you get us started off? Tell us about why you chose this topic for today.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Jennifer. I got interested in this topic in working on the latest version or edition of my logic textbook, The Art of Reasoning. My co-author, Debbie Hudgens, and I'm glad to see Debbie's on the call, is we added a whole new chapter on cognitive bias. And in one section on confirmation bias, we thought it was important to clarify and help students appreciate the difference between statements of fact and statements of opinion. And Debbie and I, by the way, are working on developing that idea into an article for journals of logic and of possibly pedagogy. So that's how I got interested. But into the subject, distinguishing fact from opinion has been a recurring issue for a long time in regard to the media, now the social media, and if anything, it's become much more pressing today. Some of you may remember the early in January of 2017. The early days of the Trump administration, his advisor Kellyanne Conway was defending his press secretary Sean Spicer by saying, "Well, John was just giving alternative facts," quote unquote. And that phrase, "alternative facts," became it made her a laughing stock and was widely ridiculed in the media. Meanwhile, Facebook and other social media have been removing what they consider false facts or misinformation, arguably in an opinionated, i.e., biased way, but still they're doing that. There are media fact checkers. Some of them are good, but many of them are just, editorializing in saying what they think is a fact and what isn't. The distinction is widely taught in elementary and secondary schools, and there's a literature in the pedagogical literature about that distinction. I'm going to come back to that a little later. Let me first clarify one just simple philosophical point. The distinction between fact and opinion is actually a kind of category mistake. Facts are aspects of reality. They're what make statements true, but they're out there in the world. Opinions are mental phenomena, beliefs in the mind. So the counter mistake is facts are not in the mind, opinions don't exist outside the mind. The real distinction is factual statements versus statements of opinion. I think many people who have commented on this understand that, but it's not always clear in other readings. In any case, this distinction has played a fairly important role in different domains over time. In law, in American law anyway, the bounds of libel law are that you can sue an author for a public statement if that author makes a false factual claim. But statements of opinion are not liable to defamation convictions. So the law, at least in this part of the law, draws this distinction between fact, what's a matter of fact, and what, or a statement of fact, and what is a statement of opinion. In journalism, beginning in the early 20th century, after the yellow journalism period of the late 19th century, William Randolph Hearst and the others. There was an effort to separate news from opinion, i.e., fact state, covering the facts versus offering opinions. And that has been challenged. It's been a topic in media studies for a while now. Somewhere on our website, I have an article called "Can Reporters Handle the Truth?" which goes into that history if anyone's interested. Recently, though, I mean, the distinction is really broken down in the major media. It's very hard to tell to read news stories and not, if you're at all, you know, conversant or able to read between the lines and seeing the amount of opinion that gets into the news stories, particularly in the Trump era. He uttered so many statements that were regarded as false, and sometimes, surely they were. The journalists began making claims in their reporting as to, you know, a claim is false or discredited. That's a real change from previous historic practice when journalists doing reporters would say, here's the fact. If there's any issue about it, they would quote one authority or another, sometimes people on different sides of the issue, and leave the assessment of, you know, what's true or false to the editorial page. But that is long since gone. So let's, with that background, I want to do a little exercise. An exercise about the question, how clear is the distinction between the kinds of statements made in the news media, commentary, everyday conversation, whatever. And I want to look at a few examples and get your take on that. There are six statements I have here, and I'm going to read them. This is an audio-only forum, so I can't show you my screen, but it shouldn't be a problem. I'm going to read the statements, and as I read them, think about, is that a statement of fact or a statement of opinion? And the issue here is not whether you think the statement is true or false. If you think a factual statement is one that you may not know whether it's true or false, but you in judging that it's factual, you say there's a way to confirm it as a fact or not. And statements that are you isolate as opinion, the issue is not whether you agree or not. You may disagree completely, but if it's a matter of opinion, even if you agree with it, consider it still an opinion. So here are the six. I'm going to read them in order, and we'll come back to some of them or any of them that you want to talk about. Number one, immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally have some rights under the Constitution. Number two, health care costs per person in the U.S. are the highest in the developed world. Number three, democracy is the greatest form of government. Number four, President Barack Obama was born in the United States. Number five, immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally are a very big problem for the country today. And number six, voter fraud across the U.S. has undermined the results of our elections. Okay, so number one, immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally have some rights under the Constitution. Factual or statement or an opinion? Anyone want to jump in?
Well, they couldn't be subjected to cruel and unusual punishment if they were arrested.
Okay. So.
So it would be. Statement, it, would Scott? Be a, it, it should be a fact, right? Just in terms of the category.
Yes. Whether you. Again, let me say the issue is not whether you think it's true. In this case, it is true. But is it a statement that you could confirm in this case? Here's the issue. The Constitution, hopefully we all have copies of it somewhere in our home or office, and you just look it up. There are some rights that are specified in it. So whether this is one of them, whether they apply to illegal immigrants or not, you can check it out. So it is, it's a factual statement. President Barack Obama was born in the United States. That was number four. How about that one?
Yeah, I mean, sure. As for all available evidence we have shows that at this
Okay, but again, Scott, the issue is not whether it's true. It's whether it's, it's a statement of fact that can be verified by something like a birth certificate or
whatever. Yeah, then it's fact.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't. Number five, immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally are a very big problem for the country today. Fact or opinion? Statement of fact, statement of opinion.
Opinion.
Great. Thank you, Jay. All right. Now, let me ask, how did you decide these? Consider the two about immigrants. Number one, about they have rights under the Constitution. And number five, they're a very big problem for the country today. What's the difference there that made you assign one to the category of factual statement, the other to the category of opinion?
I don't know. I think I'd need a philosopher to explain that, David. But I think it's bringing what I'll call judgment about the implications of a claim that make it opinion. But it could be that maybe better language or different language. I'm just not sure.
Okay. The implications. Could you elaborate that a little bit, Jay?
If you're saying, okay, here's a fact, now you are reaching a judgment about the implications of that fact, which is not a fact necessarily. I mean, it may be true, but it's not a fact.
Okay, so the fact here is that there are a number, a significant number of immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally, and then that they're a big problem is the implication you're drawing from a wider set of considerations and political judgment.
Correct.
Okay, good. By the way, you do have a philosopher on the case here, Jay, and I'm going to get to my answer anyway. So what's interesting about this, I think, all of these questions were drawn from a survey by the Pew Research Center, survey done in 2018, and just of randomly selected people, and the results are in for each of these, the majority got the answer right, but there was a significant minority who got them wrong. For example, to go back to this one on immigrants having rights under the Constitution, 54% of the respondents said it's a factual statement, but 44% said it was opinion. That's kind of striking. Democracy is the greatest form of government. 69% said that's an opinion. 29% said it's a factual statement. Now that's over a quarter of, people drawn from, randomly drawn from U.S. Population, who pretty clearly have a problem drawing this distinction. And that has raised a number of questions. There's quite a few, there's quite a bit of follow-up writing about this Pew survey. Even in writings about the law and libel law field, people were saying, well, this is the judicial standard for whether some, a person can be prosecuted for defamation. But if many people are unclear about whether a given statement is factual or opinionated, then how, you know, we have a problem in the law. And I could go on and on about journalism as well. So I want to leave a lot of time for question, but I do for questions, but I do want to offer my take on the issue, and then we can open it for discussion. So what is the proper way to draw this distinction? Well, let me start with what I think are some wrong answers. One is that factual statements must be true. And I think, you know, we went back and forth a little bit on that with Scott's comments. But no, that's not the issue. Many of us don't know enough to say whether a given statement is true, but we can still say, well, it's something that is either true or false in a way that's, you know, can be confirmed decisively and easily. Debbie Hudgens, in one of her, she teaches logic and ethics and other things at South Texas College in Texas. She gave one of her students the example, Weselco is in Starr County. Weselco is in Starr County. Now, I'm betting that unless you happen to be from Texas, you don't know whether that's true or false. Weselco, first of all, it's a city. Starr County is obviously a county. In fact, it's false, but it's a factual statement in that you can just look at a map. Go to Google Maps, you find it out in 30 seconds. So that's something that interferes a lot with the literature, particularly the teaching literature about fact and opinion. But another and a second and much worse error is the idea that opinion statements are subjective. This is very common in guides for teachers of primary and secondary school. Here's an example from a guide put out by Palm Beach State College. I assume it's the education department. Quote, a fact is a statement that can be verified. It can be proven to be true or false through objective evidence. Okay. An opinion, they continue, is a statement that expresses a feeling, an attitude, a value judgment, or a belief. It is a statement that is neither true nor false. Now, wait a minute. Opinions clearly can be true or false. They have a basis in reality. The concepts involved in a judgment, like democracy is the greatest form of government, the concepts involved in that statement are well-formed. They refer to things in the world, and you can give reasons for and against the claim. Granted that opinions can be difficult to prove, and I'm going to come back to that, because that's key to the essence. And there are special considerations for some opinions, like value statements. But statements of opinion are not just effluences coming out of the vapors coming out of a person's mind with no relation to reality. And educators who teach this kind of thing to kids, I think, are guilty of child abuse. It's really horrendous to give kids the idea that, you know, opinions are whatever you feel like or think. You don't have to consider whether they're true or false or what reasons you have for them. So that's number two. That's a really bad one. And a third one, there are others that Debbie and I have isolated, but I'm just focusing on a couple here. The third one is that there's no difference. Facts are true propositions. Opinions are, if they're true, are true propositions. This is a common answer among philosophers. It's the opposite of number two, that opinions are subjective, because it holds that opinions can be true or false. It infers that there's no difference. And there's a grain of truth. I understand this position as an epistemologist in But there is a difference. It's a matter of confirmation. How you confirm one form, one type of statement, one category of statement versus another. Facts are can be ascertained by direct observation. You know, it's a fact that I'm speaking and you're hearing me. They can be confirmed by valid statistics, vetted statistics, you know, the numbers you can look up about population of the U.S., the price index, or, you know, I appreciate their technical problems with that, but and also the unemployment rate, a lot of economic statistics are can be argued by specialists, but given what these terms mean in popular discussions, you find them out just by looking them up. There's some scientific truths that are well enough established now. They're not directly observable, but they're well established to be considered facts, like the geocentric view. Despite the efforts of flat earthers, it is not a mere opinion that the earth is round. And I would say the same of the theory of natural selection in evolution. Because a confirmation is, except in the scientific cases, because it's simple and clear, there also tends to be common agreement about facts. Once the evidence is for their truth or falsity is understood by people, they tend to agree, okay, that's true, otherwise not. On the other hand, involve much more complex arguments and considerations, background knowledge, normative premises, philosophical outlooks, political views and ideologies. So democracy is the best form of government, to use that one again. To validate that opinion, you need to look at the alternative forms of government and the history of how democracies have functioned and put it in the context of individual rights and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. It's complex. As Jay said, it's, you know, we can observe that we have a democracy, depending exactly on how you define it. That's a true statement, a factual statement, but that it's best is a matter of your judgment about the implications of the facts you know. So granted, there are borderline cases. This is not a hard and fast, bright line distinction. And so I don't want to make it sound like, you know, utterly sharp unreasonably sharp. But there is still the fact of borderline cases doesn't mean the distinction doesn't hold any more than the fact of borderline colors between orange and yellow means that orange and yellow are invalid concepts. But I do want to make another point, a last one. There is a kind of limitation on this distinction. It applies best within the domain of everyday life, news, social media, etc. In technical epistemology, all statements are subject to evaluation. There's no distinction. There's the general principle. They're evaluated by A, whether they're supported by evidence, and B, whether they're true or false. Those same standards of evaluation apply to what we would call factual statements and opinions. And that's the grain of truth, I think, in error number three that I flagged before, that there's no difference. In technical epistemology, there really isn't. But in the domain of everyday life, the news media, social media, the distinction really helps us understand how to evaluate claims. Is it a factual claim? Is something a factual claim? Can I confirm it by my own observation? Can I look it up? Or is the claim based on a chain of reasoning and interpretation on the part of the speaker, where it would be a much longer analysis, investigation, or conversation to decide whether we think it's true or false. So, you know, it's within that domain of cognitive interaction, what some of you are familiar with, Jonathan Rauch's book, The Constitution of Knowledge. It's an important part of the constitution, of the practices by which we navigate and look to the right sources for deciding what's true or false. And the reason Debbie and I included it in the book is that it's important in countering confirmation bias, the attempt to look at evaluate things in terms of whether you agree with them or not. And indeed, just a final thought, the Pew study was interesting in that it looked at the different responses of people, Republicans and Democrats. And on some of the things, like take the last example, or the immigrants are a very big problem for the country today. Many more conservatives said that, yeah, that's fact. That's a fact. And a greater number of people, Democrats and liberals, said, no, it's not a fact. That's an opinion. And liberals, you know, on other issues, they were democracy is the greatest form of government. I'm not looking at the numbers right now, but the people on the liberal left would say, oh, that's a fact, a greater number than people on the right. So there is confirmation bias, and that's one of the purposes of this study. So I think it's an important issue, but I'll leave it there and turn it over to Jennifer to moderate discussion.
Great. Thank you, David. So we've got a few of our regulars up on stage with us, including Professor Richard Salzman, professor of economics at Duke and a senior scholar at the Atlas Society. Debbie is, I believe, David's co-author on this book that they're working on. So Debbie, welcome to Clubhouse. So yes, just want to remind people we are going to be recording this for our podcast. But yeah, thoughts on what David shared, the difference between fact and opinion, other maybe examples that are more current. Obviously, a lot of facts and opinions going on around COVID and what measures mitigate it and what don't. So
I saw an article that was a scientific study that showed that, you know, if women got more social payments when they were pregnant, that the babies had more brain activity. And I just saw that as an example of politicized science of just trying to prove that socialism's the best system. But I mean, based on, you know, that being science, eventually, you know, is that going to become fact?
Well, that's a great example, because it's an experimental result. You know, in science, I didn't mention this, but the fact opinion distinction is not as relevant. A better way is the old traditional one. Scientific idea proceeds from being an hypothesis to being a tested theory, and finally, if you know, becoming a law, like the law of gravitation. But along the way, you know, science has an empirical basis, and in many cases, like medicine, biology are hugely complex, and the experiments, people do all kinds of experiments. You could say, in this case, just to break it down in sort of a literal way, the results that they got, if assuming that there was no fraud involved in the experiment, the results that they got are a matter of fact. But what they prove is a matter of opinion, because you have to end to draw a reasonable conclusion. You need corroboration by running this. Can the experiment be replicated? There's a huge problem of replication in the social sciences. And if so, how does it relate to, what's the causal connection between money, the mother's, you know, subsidizing the mother and the child's brain activity? I mean, that's a long chain of causation. At most, they could say, well, there's some sign of a correlation. But interpreting that as a fact is, it's a long way from being a fact just on the information you provided. And I may say, it does sound politicized. So,
Lawrence.
Yes, thank you. David, I have a question that I would be interested to hear your opinion on in regards to an older event. It's from 2 years ago, but I think the situation surrounding it is important to maybe analyze. So there was the MSNBC host, Rachel Maddow, who was able to beat a libel suit against her regarding what was claimed as Russian propaganda. And while I'm not as concerned about that, what is interesting was the judge's standing on why the libel suit was essentially thrown out, because he made the claim that reasonable viewers can recognize opinion. So because of that statement that, oh, people can recognize that this is over the top or this is just opinion, there's no libel being done here. And considering our discussion here regarding facts, opinion, and such, how should we view this sort of case?
Thanks, Lawrence. I wasn't sure I heard the whole question. Sorry about that. But let me make sure I understood the question. In that case you're referring to, I didn't get the details, but the judge said it was a matter, the statement, the suit was against someone who made a statement, and the judge said, well, it's a matter of opinion because everyone would recognize it as such?
Correct. Essentially, the libel suit resolved essentially that this news anchor had repeatedly made claims that Donald Trump was colluding with Russians, and this was that it was a repeated talking point of this individual through all of her news programs. So since it was a continual talking point where she continued to make this assertion, the libel suit was over that, and the judge said, regardless, this is just opinion. This is not news. This is not her making a fact.
Yeah, this is an interesting example, Lawrence, because it, in a way, it's kind of one of my borderline cases. You know, at whether Trump colluded with the Russians, there was a long inquiry, in my view, politically motivated, which turned out to be, you know, show that there was no evidence of that. And so it sort of depends on when this journalist was making these statements, before or after the inquiries were completed. And even so, the inquiries are, you know, quite complex. And I don't know enough about libel law to offer a you know, definite opinion on opinion on this. I do know that the law scholars in the law have struggled to help define what that distinction is, and there have been efforts. I know of a couple from some of the older literature that judges have offered kind of. Here are the criteria, and they're not very, you know, not very good, honestly. So there is a I might actually agree with the judge who said this is an opinion, because there are certainly other people out there, hopefully other journalists, who are, you know, exposing what the problems in this journalist claims. And so I guess in the unlikely event that I was appointed a judge on that in that bench, I would my inclination from what you've described is to say, no, it's opinion. Vicious, maybe, but still opinion.
May I say something?
Absolutely.
Please. Okay, sorry to jump in like this. But I think I couldn't hear everything Lawrence was saying, but the last two comments I thought were very good at pointing out why David and I are taking this topic up in more detail and why we think it's so important. And you'll see both of them, and they're maddening in conversations with people, right? One is the idea that if you present something that's just a straight out matter of empirical fact, whether you know what that is or not, and people who want to treat things that are clearly just matters of fact as if we're their opinions and we're all entitled to our own set of facts somehow, which, as David points out, would mean we were each living in our own little reality, which is insanity, of course. On the other hand of opinion, you get something of an analogous situation that comes up in things that are legitimately matters of opinion, but that people wrongly say. As a student once said to me a few years ago in an ethics class, well, when it comes to ethical theories, you just have an opinion like we do, right? And I said, well, I have opinions, but they're not the same as yours. Mine are not pre-reflective. They're based on many years of discussion and study and teaching and thinking about these. So not all opinions are like our picking pizza toppings or something. But the comment about the politicization of science, what should be scientific matters, I thought was a dead-on reason why this does make an important difference, why being able to specify in some systematic way, which David is going to do for us a little bit today, of what the difference is between fact and opinion. This is exactly why it matters. We're blurring that distinction so much because of the tendencies towards relativism, across the board, from science to ethics to mere facts of geography in the case of some of my students. So I just wanted to add that.
Thanks, Debbie. I think that was very, very helpful, because I think we've been focusing a little bit on people who see matters of opinions as facts. So you know, this question, yes, about whether there was election fraud and it had a significant impact, that's probably an opinion, but it can be presented as a fact. But, you know, on the other hand, what you're pointing to is something we focus a lot on, which is subjectivity, postmodernism, critical theory, this idea that really there isn't an objective reality that exists, but that there are just competing truth claims. So I think that was a really helpful addition. William or Richard, I don't know if you had any views or experience similar to Debbie in terms of dealing with your students. So if you do, unmute. Weigh in. Thanks.
Yeah, this is Richard. This is very good, David. Thank you very much. I think the positioning of opinion as something that can be verified and therefore true, I like that a lot, because it just has been a kind of frozen concept of opinion means subjective in the way that Debbie said. I hear the same thing. That's just your opinion. But if the answer to that is yes, but an opinion, you know, anchored in facts, let's discuss. But also, is it just too simple, David, to say factual statements are just more concrete there in terms of epistemological reduction of concepts to concretes? Are opinions just higher up conceptually? Like the line about democracy is the best form of government. Democracy, of course, is a huge concept. What does that mean? Even best form suggests a standard. So you're not just, I can see why that statement would be opinion, because there's so much high abstraction in it. But yet, if it could be verified, that is that really the point, that they're in different parts of the hierarchical structure of knowledge? That's all. Well, that's not all, but that's the main thing.
Yeah. Thanks, Richard. I think that you're essentially right that the reason that opinions require more complex evidence and thinking and integration is usually that they are higher up in the hierarchy. You have to have a lot of knowledge beforehand, hopefully all of it factual or most of it factual, in order to have the basis on which to evaluate an opinion. And so, yes, I agree. There's some things I'm drawing a blank here in my head, but I just sense as an epistemologist that there's some very, very concrete things that would take a great deal of thought and investigation to establish that are not necessarily higher up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I have what I can only describe as a educated intuition here, that which I haven't thought much about. So yeah, I would agree largely. But I also want to go back to something Debbie said too, that, and this is a point that she made in some of our discussions about this. You know, and considering whether this is a valid distinction to begin with, that's the philosopher's view that there's no difference, no real difference. They're all just propositions, and we know how to, there's a single standard for evaluating any proposition. However, Debbie pointed this out, if you deny the distinction in today's culture, what that it leads to is people thinking, well, everything's opinion.
Mm.
And that is an invitation to relativism, subjectivism, and, you know, the road to perdition. So I thank you, Jack, for introducing that issue about objectivity and subjectivity. So anyway, I'll leave that there.
David, it might be worth adking also, I looked at the Pew Research website on this, and it's really interesting because they don't really classify opinion statements in their survey when they tell people what the difference is, factual statement, opinion statement. It's very interesting because they say a factual statement is, and they're telling the surveyors, that those who are being surveyed, regardless of whether it was accurate or not, choose the classification you think could be proved or disproved based on objective evidence. And under opinion statement, they say, whether you agree with the statement or not, do you think it's, quote, based on the values and beliefs of the journalist or the source making the statement and could not definitively be proved or disproved based on objective evidence, unquote. Whereas you're saying, no, we should allow for opinion statements to be provable, disprovable in objective evidence. It's interesting that Pew didn't really allow for that. So I don't know if that skews the survey results, but Pew itself is assuming opinion statements cannot be supported by objective evidence, which is weird.
Thank you, Richard. Mr. Swig.
Hello, can you hear me?
It's kind of scratchy there, so you might be not in a great place. Yeah, that's bad reception. Unfortunately. Okay, sorry, I'm going to mute you, and we'll hopefully have a clearer signal in a bit.
Okay, let me just start here. Oh,
there we go. Yes, we hear you.
So I came in late, so I might not have all the context here, but I think I understand what the general theme here is. And I want to address a couple issues. One is about what is an opinion. And I think it could be just that it's trying to offer like a class of statements. So, you know how we have a certain statement, a possibly true statement, a probably true statement, or an arbitrary statement? Maybe an opinion is just an uncertain statement, and it can fall into any of those categories. It can be arbitrary, it could be probable, or it could be possible. And then an opinion is just the way to classify those into a group. So that's one idea. The other one is, Ayn Rand wrote an article called Who is the Final Authority in Ethics? And she kind of tried to address the issue of like who determines what is right and wrong. And she said that in metaphysics, it boils down to just recognizing reality, because reality is the arbiter. But in epistemology, it's, you know, you have to use your own mind and judgment to determine what is true. And if that's the case, then how would like a division of labor affect the problem of not achieving certainty, like, or not being able to be the final arbiter when it comes to determining truth? Because if you are in your own little world doing your job in the division of labor, you're not going to be able to gather all the evidence you need to understand or come to your own decision on what is true in all these other areas of life. And you're kind of dependent on other people for authorities. So any thoughts on that?
Sure. Thank you, William. Both good questions. Let me take up the first one about opinion is defined in terms of the spectrum from possibility, probability, certainty. I would say that that spectrum is orthogonal. It's a different issue. I think opinions can be certain or only probable, depending on the degree of evidence. I am certain that human beings have a right to life. That's an opinion. It's a philosophical view in political philosophy, but I spent a large part of my life thinking about that, talking about it, comparing it with other views. And so I would claim certainty for that. Whereas there are things that are factual statements that I don't know whether they're true or not. I have only, you know, I can make a probability guess, but I'm not certain about them. So I think they're really different issues. On Rand's essay, The Final Authority in Ethics, I haven't read that for a long time. So, but I'm a little surprised at your description of it, that in metaphysics, reality decides, but in epistemology, we use reason. I mean, metaphysics is like epistemology, a branch of knowledge. And so both of them involve, require the use of reason to identify what's true in the world and in metaphysics, and what's true about our means of cognition in epistemology. So if I've misunderstood you, I'm sorry. You're welcome to clarify, but that's would be my take.
I could try to read something from the essay.
see. She's asking, who's the final authority in matters pertaining to human knowledge?
We're having that same issue again, William. There we go.
Okay, so she says in the article, who is the final authority in matters pertaining to human knowledge? Well, she says that metaphysically, the only authority is reality. Epistemologically, one's own mind. The first is the ultimate arbiter of the second.
Okay. Okay, yes. I remember that now. I think what she's saying is, you know, knowledge is knowledge of reality. So whether a statement is true, whether it is a question of whether does it recognize the fact of reality. So the facts of reality are out there in the world. That's metaphysics. But identifying them epistemologically, the authority is, since facts don't reveal themselves to us magically, we have to investigate and find out. And there, from that standpoint, if you ask the epistemological question, how do we know the facts of reality? The answer would be by means of reason. And that would be my take on her statement there.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, great question.
Lizzie.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, welcome awesome. To Clubhouse.
Thank you. Yeah, this is my first time to use Clubhouse, so just want to make sure that I use it correctly. So I got a PhD in mathematics, and you know, based on my scientific training, you can guess that to me, there's very few facts in real life, actually. I understand how we can even look at the same data and come up with a different conclusion. And because just based on, you know, different, you know, interpretations for that, which is fine. However, I've been seeing in the scientific area that more and more scientists, that they try to publish what I would call a partial fact. That might lead to how the audience will want, how they want the audience to think about some of, you know, their strong opinions. This has been happening for a long while, even when I was a PhD student at Duke. And when I talked to some of my fellow PhD students in the biology department, they would tell me that, yes, they did an experiment 100 times, failed 99% of the time, and they only published that one result when it was successful. And we cannot call them a fraud or something, but somehow it's just it concerns me in the sense if scientists are trying to, you know, get into this area and try to extend their power too much into trying to I wouldn't say manipulate, but you know, just kind of try to influence how other people think about some specific thing from a specific angle. So I wonder, how do you think about this? What's your opinion on that?
My opinion is, God, there are a lot of things I could say. I'm not in the scientist myself, and although I've dipped into some fields of science, mostly social science, psychology, and I know that there, what I referred earlier to, the replication crisis. There's also cherry picking results. Like you say, running an experiment 99 times, it fails it, to confirm your hypothesis, but you only publish the one that provides some evidence. There's a movement against that by saying, before you run an experiment, you have to say what your hypothesis is and what would establish it. If the experiment succeeds in doing that, fine. If not, you have to make that clear too to your colleagues or whatever. I don't know how exactly this works, but I've heard people in biology and psychology talk about it. But there is
on a larger scale, there's a problem with partiality in particularly in a lot of journalism and popular culture discussions. You know, there's the old distinction that there's lying by commission, telling a lie, and there's lying by omission, leaving out something you know is relevant. And I think a lot of journalists are now lying by omission because they're selecting, journalists have to be selective in what they write and the facts that they report, but there are rational and less rational, objective and unobjective ways of making that selection. And you can lie by leaving out relevant facts. I see this all the time in journalism. So, you know, I think your point is good. And on the scientific front, it's a problem I know some people are trying to address, and I hope it would become more common to expose this kind of really dishonest scientific inquiry, whether or not it's politically motivated or not, but I think it often is.
Thank you. Thank you. David. Thanks, Lizzie. Welcome. And thanks, William. Thanks, Richard. Thank you so much, Debbie, Scott, Lawrence. Also want to thank all of you who joined, including Professor Stephen Hicks, who's in the audience. Great conversation. I just pinned up here at the top, this is a forum that Professor Salzman has with the Atlas Society, Morals and Markets. And it's for students. So if you are in the student age range and want to join, then please do. If you are a lifelong student, then join us. Just please audit and keep your screen off, because we are trying to create a peer group experience for our young people. Also wanted to let you know, next week we have our schedule changed up a little bit. On Tuesday, we have a clubhouse with Rob Trusinski, What is Human Nature? And then I'm going to be having a conversation on Wednesday in our weekly webinar with Ashley Rinsberg. He's written the book, The Gray Lady Winked, looking at, speaking of fact versus opinion, it's an interesting lens to look at his subject matter of the New York Times historically, and misreporting and errors and misrepresentations. And then again on Wednesday, we're going to have a clubhouse chat and Ask Me Anything on ethics with Professor Hicks. So hope to see you all there. And again, thanks for joining.
Thanks, everyone.